11 to 31, a very familiar passage, but I really hope and I pray that today there'll be some new things that we might gain from this. So Luke 15. So Jesus continued. There was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to the father, "Father, give me my share of the estate." So he divided his property between them. Not long after that, the younger son got together all he had, set off for a distant country, and there squandered his wealth in wild living. After he had spent everything, there was a severe famine, and it took over that whole country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to a citizen of that country, who sent him to the fields to feed pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. When he came to his senses, he said, "How many of my father's hired men have food to spare, and here I am, starving to death. I will set off and go back to my father and say to him, 'Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Make me like one of your hired men.'" So he got up and went to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him and kissed him. The son said to him, "Father, I have sinned against heaven and against you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son." But the father said to his servants, "Quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." So they began to celebrate. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. When he came near the house, he heard music and dancing, so he called one of the servants and asked him what was going on. "Your brother has come," he replied, "and your father has killed the fattened calf because he has come back safe and sound." The older brother became angry and refused to go in. So his father went outside to him and pleaded with him. But he answered his father, "Look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. Yet you never gave me even a young goat so that I could celebrate with my friends. But when this son of yours who has squandered your property with prostitutes comes home, you kill the fattened calf for him." "My son," the father said, "you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad, because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found." As I say, a very familiar passage that you're probably thinking, "I know all about that. I know everything about that." But I really hope this morning that there'll be things that you can take away that are different. As we're thinking about people who care about us, as we're thinking about people who invest in us, people who take time with us. So who is the audience for this story? Well, Jesus is in the house of a Pharisee. So it's the Pharisees, the religious leaders, the good people, the people who think that they're doing it all right. They wouldn't have invited any of the sinners. It's just the A-list people that are there. They've been invited to hear this man speak. You might already have worked this out. The father in the story represents God. The older son, the Pharisees. And the younger son, well, it's those sinners. Those that are not welcome. Those that shouldn't be around. I'm just going to go through the story and pick out a couple of bits that have struck me. And as I say, my prayer is that it will be helpful to you as well. It starts off so well. There was a man. He had two sons. That sounds happy. That sounds complete. But very quickly in the next verse we find out that it's not as happy as it looks. Jude said as well that we sometimes look at other people and think, if only my family was like theirs, if only things, my relationships were like theirs, it would be okay. But we don't know what goes on under the surface. Don't look to others for that perfect relationship. The youngest son comes to his father and he says, give me my share of the estate. He chooses his words very carefully, because if he had said, give me my share of the inheritance, he would be saying to the father, I am now responsible for the family. So he chooses very carefully what he says. He says, I don't want to be responsible for this family. I just want the money. I want to go out and have a good time with no responsibility. It's all about me. I want to enjoy myself. The father must have had a very heavy heart. But the verse, it doesn't say he argued with them or he tried to convince them differently. It just says he divided it up. Within that culture, that was a big no-no. Because really what the son was saying was, I wish you were dead. Because if you were dead, I would be free to be my own man. And yet the father allows him to take this inheritance. It's not in the bank. He can't just go and draw it out. The father would have had to have sold some livestock, maybe done something about his property. It was all tied up in things. But he goes and he divides it between them. The older son never asked for this, but the father divides it up to make sure that they both have their share. It would have been humiliating for the father. He had to do this while he was still alive. And everyone around him in that community would have known, and the whispers and the looks. How dare his son say this? We thought they were a good family. Sometimes that happens today, doesn't it? So with a heavy heart, he divides up what he has and he gives to the younger son as well as the older son. The next verse, the son gathers it up and off he goes. I finally got what I wanted. I can go and do my own thing. He goes off and he spends his money. Well, actually, verse 13 doesn't say he spends it. It says much more than that. It says he squanders it. He wastes it. He acts like it means nothing. The father had gone through probably humiliation to make sure he'd got it. He'd gone through heartbreak because this son of his didn't want him to be alive. But for the youngest son, it costs nothing. I shall just throw it away. I will use it where I want. His life spirals down into a very dark place. He ends up working in the worst possible place for a Jew, working with the pigs. Can it get any lower? And he even wants to eat what they're being fed, but nobody will give it to him. He comes to his senses in verse 17, but he comes to his senses saying, surely I should go back because my father's hired helpers have enough food. It's all about his stomach. He's not remorseful at all. He's not wanting to say sorry to his dad, really. He wants to fill his stomach. They've got plentiful food. I want my physical needs met now. He's still missing the point. He's still not understanding what his father has done for him and actually what he's still doing for him that is unseen. In verse 18, when he says, I shall return to my father and say, I've sinned against heaven and against you. And it's very, very much like in Exodus 8-11, when Pharaoh is talking to Moses. And he says, and Yes, we understand that we've sinned against God. So can you make these things stop? The plagues, the locusts, the frogs, the sores. Just make them stop. Actually, Pharaoh wasn't interested in God at all. He was just interested in the fact that his life was difficult. The life of his people was difficult. And if you can just stop that, then that'll be good. But God is always more interested in what's going on in our hearts. Not just what is happening physically and outside of us. Yes, he is interested in that. But ultimately, he wants to know that he has our hearts. Please stop what is happening, the son was thinking. He wasn't thinking about being reconciled with his dad and his brother and the rest of the family. He also said, I could return and be a hired helper. A hired helper is a craftsman. So yes, he was saying, I'm no longer fit to be a son, but actually I'm not fit to be a slave either. Put me in a place that has got respect. Put me in a place where I am free to choose for myself. Put me in a place where I can pay my way. I can still make my money. I can still live well. As I read that, I always thought, well, actually, isn't it good? He's coming back and he's sorry for what he did. And as I've looked at this, I thought, actually, he's not really sorry about what he's done. He just wants the hunger to stop. He wants God to physically help him. Our first word, there's three words that are part of this little talk. Our first word is remember. He remembers the plentiful amount of food. He remembers that he was satisfied. And he wants to go back to that. Not understanding that physical satisfaction can go at any point. So he remembers and starts out. We're told as he's starting out, the father is still thinking about him. He hasn't forgotten him. He is still heartbroken that his youngest son has not wanted to be around, has not wanted him to care for him in the way that he wanted to. So he returns, our second word. He remembers how it was, and he sets out to return. In Exodus also, the children of Israel remember. And it points, they complain to Moses and say, can't we just go back? Because at least there we had a bed. At least there we were fed. At least there it was okay. Yeah, we were slaves, but let's push that aside. Sometimes we remember the wrong things. Sometimes, as we say, we look through life with rose-tinted glasses. We think, well, it was better then. Thinking back to your mother church. Thinking back to a time in the past where you maybe think, actually, it was all right then. It's much better. But it's understanding that we need to remember the things that God wants us to remember, not just the way that we are physically satisfied, the way that we are helped, that is not a spiritual way. So he returns. The children of Israel didn't return to Egypt, fortunately, because that wouldn't have been the best thing. That wasn't God's plan for them. The father sees him from a distance and he starts to run. He pulls up his clothes and he runs. We don't think anything of that, really, in our culture. But in that time, for a man over 40, we're presuming he was possibly over 40, to whip up your, I don't know what you call it, your dress, you whip up your clothes, and to leg it was really quite not good. He was willing to be humiliated again for the sake of his son. He wanted his son to know just how much he loved him. I don't care what the others think. I'm going to get there as quick as I can, and I'm going to tell them how much I love them. Actually, I'm going to show them how much I love them and how much I have still for him. He thinks he's lost it all, but I've still got so much more to give him. The son starts to try and tell the father this speech that he's got, and the father just doesn't worry about that. Quick, quick, bring me a robe. The son has turned up. He would smell awful. His clothes were probably dirty and in tatters. He turns up filthy. His motives and his clothes match each other. But the father gets the robe. And we've done all about robes of righteousness and things. So think about some of those things that Pete has talked to us about. He puts the robe on his son. He declares, "You are my son. You have come back to be something lower than that, but you are still my son." He puts a ring on his finger. The ring is the way that they would be able to do business. So that would show his authority. So the ring goes on his finger. "You have that authority in my family." He sticks shoes on his feet. Again, a sign that he is more than a slave. He is more than a servant. He is a son. So the father dismisses what has gone on and says, "Look, I've still got so much to give you." When we remember what God has done for us, what does it make us feel like? Sometimes, for me, it makes me feel ashamed when I think of how much God has done for me and how little I appreciate that. And maybe it's as you are a Christian longer, maybe we forget a little bit about just how amazing the gift of new life, new birth is. I hope you don't mind, Jean, but I'm going to share Jean's story from yesterday. She's got to remember what it is now. So at the prayer breakfast, we were talking about various things. And Jean was saying when she first became a Christian, she found it really difficult to stop telling people about God and just how amazing he was. She says she didn't understand a lot of it, but she just had to tell them. And we'd been talking about the leper in Mark 2, I think it's the beginning of Mark 2, that Jesus heals and he says, "Don't tell him else, but just go and show the priest and then make your sacrifice." But the next verse says he couldn't stop telling people. He was so excited about it. Do you remember that? When you first became a Christian, when God first got your heart, when you first understood how much you were cared, did you love to tell people so much so that they thought you were weird? That they thought, "Oh, here she goes again," or he goes again. And then we become used to it. We become a bit blasé. The son, the youngest son and the older son, had spent all this time with the father. They knew how much he cared for them. But what does it matter? We're going to look at the older son in a second and his response when the younger one comes back. But what do we remember? And are we still excited about this gift that God has given, that cost him so much, that he was willing to be humiliated for, so that we could return to him, so that we could have that relationship with him? Come back to God. Come back to that first love. Remember how much he loves you. So the younger son is restored, and a big party starts. When the father put the robe and the ring and the shoes on, then the son understood. Then he was repentant. Then he realized, "I'm really sorry. I hadn't realized how much all of this cost you. I hadn't realized how much you care about me when actually all I should have had was your anger and been thrown out of the family. But you've welcomed me back." God welcomes us into his family in spite of what we might have done. I know just how bad I am. I might put enough of a front on that you think I'm not too bad. But I know my thoughts. I know my attitudes. I know my motives for things. And sometimes they're rags. We can pretend that we're doing things because it's a good thing and it's the right thing. But a lot of the time, it's because it's what I want. But even in that, God takes me, he takes you, he takes us, and he says, let me put this robe on you. Let me welcome you back. The older son is the one that I suppose, often think that I understand where he's coming from. Because yes, he's been there and he's worked away and he's done all sorts of things. And he has this sense of, but you haven't even shown me you care. And the response of the father at the end, you're always with me. Everything I have is yours. There is nothing that we can't ask God our Father. There is nothing that we can bring to him that he will not answer. Might not be in the way we want, but he will answer. We don't get the end of the story. We're not told that this son comes in and hugs the younger son and it's all made right. We're left to wonder. The Pharisees who heard this story were left to wonder because they were thinking, well, we're okay. We carry out the law. We do all the right things. We look good. Obviously, we're okay. And yet Jesus has shown them here that God is saying, but your attitude isn't right either. Your motives are not right either. You have to return to your love, to God's love, to the way that God wants you to live. It's not just about the law. It's not just about doing the right thing, saying the right thing, dressing in the right stuff. It's about your heart. What are your motive for what you do? So I'm going to take a bit of artistic license here. And the last word is to think about renew. Renew your commitment. I hope, I know this is a story, but in my head, big blockbuster, I would hope that at the end, that the younger son renews his commitment to the family. That responsibility that he didn't want. That he says, actually, now I understand where I fit in this family. I understand that I am important in this family. And I'm going to work with the others. I don't know about the older son. Not sure where he would have been. But what about us? Have we renewed our commitment to God? As we're doing this praying through Lent, as you're doing, I meant to mention this earlier, the Try Praying leaflets, booklets are here if you didn't get one. As you're doing Try Praying, as you're thinking about the people that you're praying for Lent, are you renewing your commitment to God and his family? We are a small part of God's worldwide family. Are we renewing our desire to work for the Father, to be committed, to give our all? Because he gave his all. He gave what was most precious. In the same way as the father in the story was willing to be humiliated, God sent Jesus, who was humiliated on the cross, who was willing to be laid bare for all to see and punished. Not because of what he'd done, but because of what I'd done. That sin that is in me that I'm so aware of sometimes. That's why Jesus died. So that I could have his robes, so that I could be that changed person, that my heart could be changed. Philippians 1:3 is a verse that I like to use quite often when I'm thinking about some of my people who have supported and cared for me, all these folks in different places that we've thought about. I thank my God every time I remember you. Because you have walked with me on this journey. But in the message it says it's slightly more exciting. Every time you cross my mind, I break out in exclamations of thanks to God. Each exclamation is a trigger to prayer. The people who have invested in us did it so that we could be free to invest in other people for God's kingdom. So remember the love that God has, that he has shown us through Jesus and through those people around us. Return to that first love. Don't become comfortable and blasé about all that Jesus has done, that we might be one for him. And renew your commitment. Renew your heart. Romans 12 and verse 2. Do not conform any longer to the pattern of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Then you will be able to test and approve what God's will is, his good, pleasing, and perfect will. Let God renew our mind, transforming the thoughts, the patterns that we work through, so that we become his people, so that we can see our part in this place. You're not here by accident. There is a purpose. And when you know your purpose, that gives so much more freedom in your life. Your purpose is to seek God, to share him with others, and to see his kingdom being extended. Even if you feel you're in rags today, God comes and clothes you in a robe of righteousness. And he says, you are my child. You are my child, and I love you.